السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. أنا منال الدباغ وأهلا وسهلا في بودكاست لنبدأ الحوار Start the conversation. الهدف من البودكاست أنه نبدأ الحوار في مواضيع مختلفة ما أخذت حقها في مساحة الحوار أو ما في أحد يبغى يتكلم فيها. المواضيع مختلفة لكن كلها بتدور حول كيف نقدر نعيش بكليتنا مش كأجزاء متفرقة في تناغم مع الناس حوليننا والبيئة. الفضول والشغف هو اللي خلاني أبدأ البودكاست وهو اللي يدفعني لاختيار المواضيع وضيوف البودكاست. مرة تانية أهلا وسهلا، وإن شاء الله تلاقوا شيء مفيد في الحلقة، وإذا في أي مواضيع تحبوا تسمعوها أو أشخاص تحبوا تسمعوا منهم أتواصلوا معايا. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. حلقة اليوم باللغة الإنجليزية. ضيفي في الحلقة دكتور ديفيد بيرسيلي، خبير في مجال حل النزاعات والتعامل مع الصدمات. اشتغل في دول متعددة في الشرق الأوسط زي الأردن وفلسطين والسودان ومصر وأماكن تانية في العالم. ديفيد أنشأ TRE Tension and Trauma Release Exercises، عبارة عن تمارين بسيطة تساعدنا إنه نتعامل ونتخلص من الصدمات والتوتر. في حلقة اليوم أتكلمت مع ديفيد كيف نقدر نساعد نفسنا ونفهم نفسنا أكثر في ظل التوتر اللي حاصل والصدمات اللي بتصير معانا. كانت حلقة فيها معلومات ثرية، أتمنى أنها تفيدكم، وإذا في أي سؤال تواصلوا معايا. شكرا جزيلا. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Welcome to a new episode of Start the Conversation podcast. لنبدأ الحوار. My guest today is David Bersalli, an international expert in the areas of trauma intervention and conflict resolution. He is the creator of Tension and Trauma Release Exercises, TRE. David have worked in the Middle East region, Sudan and Kenya, Egypt and Lebanon. He is fluent in English and Arabic. David, أهلا وسهلا.
لنبيكي شكرا. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
David, thanks again. We did a live call with you last year. So thanks again for coming for a recorded one. I don't think I could have picked a better time to redo this interview than the current climate that we are at. We're recording this on April 3rd because I have no idea what's be happening when this episode gets published. We have changes by the day. So let's start from here. What's going on now? What's your thoughts as a trauma specialist with how the world is functioning, right?
Well, it's interesting because I'm watching it like everyone else is, and I'm observing two different things happening. Obviously, the stress levels are starting to rise. People are worried and concerned. Certainly, if people have had deaths in their families, there's tremendous tragedy. Everyone's protecting themselves. So we see anxiety levels rising because of all these lock-ins that we're having around the world. Everyone is now forced to be with their families in their homes, and the children are not in school any longer, and maybe the parents aren't working. So now you have the stress levels of a family actually living together in their own house, which is a little bit unusual because usually there's distractions with the kids going to school and parents going to work, et cetera. But now they're forced to be in a more intense relational circumstance than they're accustomed to. Initially, this can be quite pleasurable because the parents and children get to relate at a different level than what they normally do. But if the parents aren't making money anymore, then that adds another stress level to them. So there's an interesting dynamics of a mix of both the pleasure of being together as a family, the strain of being together as a family, and the defensiveness of the fear of what's happening globally. But in general, stress levels are continually rising.
I bet. And you talk about the being together in a family being a pleasurable, and the reality of many people that it's not people who are in difficult relationships. So I could only imagine that this is even, you know, double or triple the stress level.
Yeah, I think that's right. There are so many different ways that stress is being produced, not just from the virus, but from social interaction, family interaction. Like you said, if they're not safe or they've been stressful or difficult marriages or difficulty with children, yes. Now it's being really forced to deal with it. And that's the situation we find ourselves in.
Yeah. And that brings me to the trauma aspect of it. First, I'd like you, how do you define trauma? Because there are so many different definitions and, you know, it's essentially the same thing, but everyone sees it from a different aspect. So
I'm going to say, if we put trauma on a continuum, a line where we go from mild stress to severe trauma, that's, for me, that's an easier way of understanding what trauma is, because at a certain level, when we go up that line, when we increase, and we need to start using defensive mechanisms like dissociation or freezing or numbing out, that means most likely that's trauma, because the body wouldn't use those mechanisms unless the situation was so overwhelming that I don't know how to deal with it from my normal coping mechanisms. So it uses exceptional coping mechanisms. That would be trauma, because that allows us then for different people to be exactly in the same circumstances, but they're responding differently. Some people could be traumatized by it and other people just stressed out by it.
So would it be fair to kind of put it in that whatever is happening is too much for that individual to deal with on a, you know, regular level?
Yes, they can't use their normal coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. So the body engages what we call dissociation, numbing, or freezing, where we basically are in the situation, but we're not having any feelings around it. All our feelings are numbed out, and that's the way we survive it. Different from being in a situation where you feel your feelings, and you know that that's a normal coping mechanism to use that, then you're not being traumatized by it.
Okay. And the way I'm seeing it, that the situation is bringing out or kind of bringing to light the previous traumas, while this situation could be traumatizing for some.
That's a good point, because if I'm in a situation like now, as an example, and I'm starting to feel traumatized by it, I'm starting to numb out of my feelings, I'm starting to dissociate a bit because it's too overwhelming, that can, in fact, reactivate previous traumas, particularly if I was a child, as an example, and I had a lot of childhood trauma of dissociation or freezing because my childhood was not comfortable, then all of those traumas start to collectively sort of remind themselves. So now you not only have the trauma of this present moment, but you have the trauma of past experiences also kind of knocking on your door, and that even creates a greater sense of overwhelm.
So let's take the listeners to TRE, the tension and trauma release exercises. Some listeners would have no idea what this is. I know some might have encountered Mohammed, who is doing a phenomenal job in Saudi, in Jeddah, especially with being a TRE provider. But that's not the case for everyone. So you could choose your starting point of, you know, get us more familiar with TRE.
Okay, so TRE actually stands for Tension and Trauma Releasing Exercises. And it's because this technique releases everything from mild tension in the body to severe trauma experiences that are still located in the tissue of the body. And what it is it's a series of 7 exercises, quite simple, that simply do 2 things. They mildly stress the body and they stretch the body. And in that process of stressing and stretching, you can activate a mild tremoring mechanism in the human body. And the tremoring mechanism actually starts to release tightness or tension in the muscle and tissue. And as it releases that, if it's associated with a traumatic or emotional or psychological event, that emotion and that psychological memory may begin to release as well. But it's really the tremor mechanism. It's genetically encoded in every human being, and it's designed to activate at the time of stressful events to actually ensure that we don't overwhelm ourselves. So what I did was I developed a series of exercises that helps us activate that shaking mechanism in the safety and comfort of our own home so that we can take past stressful or traumatic events and actually clear them out of our system in the present moment of safety and comfort.
So that is increasing our capacity to deal with stress.
It actually helps us become more resilient because now the body is able to complete a full cycle. So in our future, we may get stressed or we may experience trauma, but when the body begins to tremor or vibrate itself, it actually can release all of that high anxiety and tension in the body and come back to its natural state again. When it completes that full cycle, that's what we call developing resiliency or neuroplasticity. From a neurological perspective, it means you've trained the brain how to experience trauma, but also how to come out of that trauma and go back into its comfortable, relaxed state again.
Okay. Two words here caught my attention. I would like you to elaborate more the safety, the perception of safety or the new reception that is different from each person to another. How would you define that? Or could you explain that more?
Yeah. During the time of a traumatic event, that's what was ripped away from us was a sense of safety. And we had no control over it. Someone or some situation took that away from us. And so once the safety was removed, we felt the terror or the rage or the hurt or the fear, whatever, that some situation was beyond our ability to control its effect on us. So what I'm talking about in terms of restoring safety is quite interesting. You don't have to go to a therapist. You can restore safety by being with your partner or your spouse or a loved one that you feel close to, your mother or father, whoever it is that makes you feel that they really understand you and you're very safe to maybe expose these deep feelings of pain and fear and anxiety, but they can be there for you and you know that they can handle that with you, that's restoring safety. So it could, for every different person, be somebody different. It doesn't have to be somebody who's clinically trained at all. It has to be somebody you could lay your head on their lap and cry, and you know you'll be safe.
And if I'm not mistaken, that comes from the from Dr. Stephen Porges, the polyvagal theory and the ventral vagus system.
Yes, that's actually being talked about by many therapists now. And what they're suggesting is that the one element isn't insight or knowledge about your trauma, but it's restoring the safety for the individual that will finally bring the nervous system back into full regulation. So Stephen Porges talks about it in the polyvagal theory as the ventral vagal is the vagus nerve of relationship and social engagement. And the dorsal vagus nerve is the one of dissociation and numbness. And that if we can strengthen the ventral vagal nerve, the one of social engagement, the stronger we can make that, and that's being made by relationships with one another, the stronger that is, the more, the easier it will be for the person to come out of their freeze or dissociation response and re-engage into their own ventral vagal system. Now, the reason we say we need somebody safe is because if I'm the one who's in danger and you're the person I come to as my safe person, my nervous system is going to regulate towards your nervous system so that if you're in a ventral vagal state and you're calm, you're safe, I know that I can trust you, my nervous system is going to hone in on that and resonate towards you. And I'm going to use you temporarily to help, you're going to help me regulate my nervous system.
That brings me to my own experience as a parent or caretaker of mm-hmm. how taking care of my own nervous system and strengthening my ventral vagus system has a tremendous effect on my kids, people around me. And since we're in this situation, you talk a lot about the relationships and having, you know, a safe person. And now we find ourselves isolated and many people struggle to find that safe person, or they're stuck with an unsafe person. What are the options, the survival options that we can, you know, cultivate?
Yeah, build on your point. As the mother, your children, up until the day they die, are going to regulate to your nervous system. They will know when mommy's upset. They will know when mommy's happy. They will know when mommy's afraid. And this is because they spent 9 months in your womb regulating to your nervous system. So I don't care how old the child is after they've been born, no matter how what age, they will regulate towards mommy's nervous system. It's fascinating.
It is no pressure to mothers out there.
No pressure to mothers in the world. It's so interesting. But you already know that. You know when you're upset, even if you try to hide it from your children, they recognize it. That's simple. So where are we at today? All right, so let's say somebody's in a situation where they're not safe. Well, we do have this luxury of being able to get on the internet and connect with somebody who is safe. So if that's all you can do, just keep doing that connection, see? And you may only be safe for like 1 hour out of the day, but at least you've given your body a chance to take a break from being highly in a high state of anxiety, and you've been able to give it at least a little bit of a break, a relaxation. Now, if you do have the luxury of being in the home with somebody who is safe, then you can certainly regulate towards that person. But what I'm trying to introduce and teach with TRE is, since we're all in our home right now, get every person in the family to do TRE together. Because what you will do, as everybody begins to tremor, everyone's nervous system will interrelate with each other, and you can slowly start to bring down the nervous systems of every person in that room. I see it happen when I do trauma workshops around the world. Even if I was just in South Africa with 150 people. Once people's nervous systems start to down-regulate and they start to come down, all of the other nervous systems in the room pick up on that. So you can actually get everybody's nervous system to downregulate at the same time. To do this with mommy and daddy and the children in the room can have a profound effect. Even if someone isn't feeling safe, our nervous systems will pick up on the nervous systems in the room that are safe. And you can get a whole family to reduce their stress and increase their safety all in one session.
Not the idea, but we're all one, to a whole different level, that we are all one nervous system. And it goes, of course, both ways. Here in Saudi, once they started, you know, shutting off school and things started to get restricted, I felt like really stressed, like, you know, the whole world stress have, you know, fell upon my shoulders. And I knew I was able, you know, I was recognizing this is not just my own stress.
Right.
And I think that's a piece that I'm so grateful to have that understanding and recognition that I have a role in this whole thing. I either can choose to stay dysregulated and add to that stress, or find a way to dysregulate, or, you know, self-regulate and bring my nervous system back to baseline.
Yeah, you're right about that. And this is an important thing that I think we're becoming more aware of because of this virus right now. We are one species, period. And we are designed as a relational species. So it's not just if I'm in close proximity to you, I can watch a movie on the internet or a news report that's talking about the danger of the virus and how difficult it is, and that will dysregulate my nervous system. At the same time, I've been watching videos of how people are coping. They're playing their violin on the balcony, or they're starting to sing together. Even though they can't be in close proximity to one another, they are still relational to one another. So we're watching the entire collective nervous system of the human race being affected by news media or interactions mostly over the internet. And we can make that choice. That could either be positive and downregulate our nervous system as a group, or it can be negative and upregulate the nervous system of the entire planet. Our whole species is going through re-regulation, and we can choose which direction we want to go in.
Absolutely. And I'd like to be optimistic and say that we're going in the right direction. What's your view on that?
Well, I think here's a great example of what you're talking about. What if people are severely traumatized, see? And so this is adding to their previous traumas. Different people who have been severely traumatized, but have resolved that trauma. So now they're in a healthier state. So what I think we're seeing is the dialogue going back and forth between people who are in healthy states of regulation and trying to stay there, people who are in dysfunctional states of regulation but trying to move towards healthy states. So we're watching a dialogue of the nervous system of the human species going back and forth. People trying to be positive, trying to put good videos up on the internet, funny videos of how are they dealing with being isolated and alone. We're actually watching how is our species dealing with the nervous system. And quite frankly, it's still a dialogue. It's going back and forth from day to day. But I think what I'm seeing is, although the news tends to be reporting the more negative side of this, the human beings who have access to their internet, they're reporting the more positive sides. Here's what we did. Here's a comic. Here's a joke. Here's how I've been dealing with it. I play music on my balcony. So we're seeing human beings literally struggle to keep their nervous systems regulated in a positive way, whereas the news, unfortunately, their job is to report what's happening. So there's a dialogue going back and forth there. The bottom line hasn't been decided yet. We haven't figured out whether we've made it or not because we're in the middle of the crisis. But we're going to find very positive things. And the human species, it's going through transformation. This is new for us, okay? And we do have a brain that can actually rewire its neurology. I actually think we're going to end up feeling closer as a species at the end of this.
I really would hope so. And I see it because once we are put in this isolation, there have become a tremendous need to connect. We really need to connect over Zoom, over social media, and face to face to have that. It's became a necessity of survival. My second point that I want to bring this conversation to is, and you've mentioned it many times, is the body. And I think that's a piece that has been for a long time in psychotherapy and many different modality, even maybe some mindfulness practices, missing from the picture.
Right. See, it's kind of interesting. I follow the history of psychotherapy and these types of modalities. And we've almost made the body subservient to working in the mind or in the brain. Tell me what's wrong with you, etc. And it's almost as though the body is just a secondary element to this, and that if we heal it in the mind, we'll heal it in the body. And that is completely 100% not true. When the human person goes through a traumatic or stressful event, it goes through it both psycho-emotionally and physiologically. There's no such thing as a separation between the two. See, so although we separated the brain and the body so that we could study them medically, and that's been very useful for us, in terms of the human organism, it has no idea it's been separated because it doesn't work in a separate manner. Every component, every element in the human body or the human organism that includes the brain and the body is interrelational. There's no such thing as one of them functions without affecting the other part. Now, that can work to our advantage. And here's how it works to our advantage in TRE. If we have difficulty talking about what we're going through, so we don't have the safety or the words to speak about it. Because the body has a nervous system that's what's called a dual pathway. Signals go from the brain to the body, but just as importantly, and even sometimes more importantly, signals go from the body to the brain. So in TRE, that's the pathway that we're using. We're activating a tremor mechanism that activates in the body itself. So in the tissue, in the muscle spindle fibers, central pattern generators, these are all located in the body. We stimulate those to activate the tremor mechanism, which sends a signal to the brain of release and relaxation. So we can actually affect the neurology, not by talking at all, but by activating the tremor mechanism. And so I can get the whole family to systematically activate their tremor mechanism in their body, and every one of them will be flooding the brain with signals of relaxation and safety. See? And so we can actually change the neural functioning, reduce the stress of human beings, not even by talking about the stress, by actually activating the stress release mechanism in the body, and that will reduce the stress in the neurophysiology of the human organism.
That's one of the pieces that I find fascinating, and when I'm working with other people, is the story is not what it's important. I don't even know the story. And with so many people, that comes as a relief of like, okay, so I don't need to be, because they're always with telling a story, not always, most of the time, there's a sense of shame and guilt and, you know, all the nice cocktail of emotions that comes with, you know, being vulnerable.
Well, what happens oftentimes, and I found this with a lot of military people, every time they retell a story, they reactivate the story. And so if we can eliminate the telling of the story, they can still downregulate into a calm state and never have to address the story at all, because we're just working with the body. We're getting the body at the present moment just to calm down and relax. That's all we're doing. And then that prevents them from having to tell a story, which is very often recharging.
Absolutely. Could you tell us your experience with working with military? Because that's... when we talk about, you know, trauma and stress, people in war zones, this is what most people see like the highest form of stress, you know, PTSD and, you know, all these things that comes with, you know, being in military or war zones. How's your experience with that and your success stories?
What I call my litmus test, meaning if you can get a soldier to accept CRE, you can get anybody. And there's a number of reasons, but it's not just soldiers, but they're sort of the extreme model of us as well. So what do? They train to prepare themselves to be very defended. So they become strong. They develop personalities and bodies to survive anything in life, even the confrontation or the possible confrontation with death. So now they've really built themselves up to be have great endurance. Now, all of us have done that over our lives too, in not as severe of a way, but we've had to build ourselves up and build our defenses psychologically, emotionally, and physically to protect ourselves from our traumatic events or stressful events in life. See, soldiers have done this to an extreme. So when soldiers come back then and I start working with them, there's a couple of things. I have to break through those strong defended muscles or that strong defended body that they have. And I have to do it in a way that they feel it's not threatening to them, so they don't recontract. So when they tremor, they're kind of funny. They find it odd because they're surprised that something could break through their physical defense mechanism. See, they built all these strong muscles to protect themselves, and the tremor mechanism can break through it. But because the tremor mechanism is pleasurable, they find it odd, and then they find it pleasurable. And then what I find mostly is they slowly start to melt. And so they relax. And as they start to relax, they can actually feel sleepy or tired. Many soldiers report sleeping very deeply the night after having done TRE. And all it did was it took all those defense mechanisms they spent months and years building, And he kind of gently goes through all of them and gets them to relax. And they let go of the physical defense. Then they let go of the psychological defense and then the emotional defense. And they just end up having a pleasurable experience of finally coming back into their body in the present moment without all those defense mechanisms they've had to build up. So we do exactly the same thing. We activate the tremors and it slowly kind of melts away all those defenses we had to build up. And it gets us to finally just lay down on the floor in a relaxed state and say, wow, I feel pleasure, but I don't know why. I feel relaxed and I don't know why, but something changed that makes me feel like I'm in the present moment and all those stories and all that history are not here right now.
I want to highlight something that you've said in terms of people generally, not just military, that these mechanisms we have built throughout the years of closing up, stressing out, or even dissociation or numbing. These are mechanisms that helps us to protect ourselves. So with being in survival mode, this is our way to kind of protect ourselves. So it's not something that it's wrong with us. It's something that have happened for us in a way.
Yeah. Every defense mechanism we have, psychological defenses, emotional defenses, and physical defenses, they actually are designed perfectly to help us survive life. No matter what circumstance we are in, we've got a defense mechanism to protect us so that we can endure it and we can survive it. Our problem in life is, and this again is where the tremor mechanism comes in, is we've built up the defense mechanisms, but we then use them regularly, even in times when we don't need them, because we haven't learned how to let them go. We learn how to build them up and they help protect us. But when I'm now in a safe relationship and I'm comfortable, I'm still living out of my defense mechanisms because we haven't learned how to let them go. And the tremor mechanism in TRE, as far as I've been able to see, is it's the mechanism that turns off the defenses. See? So we need to activate it because it continually turns off any defense mechanisms, maybe even that we had to build during the day. If our boss was stressful or our job was stressful, we need to turn off that mechanism at the end of the day. So every defense mechanism is healthy, but living in them when we no longer need them is the unhealthy element there. And the tremor mechanism, at the end of the day, you activate that, and that starts turning off all the defense mechanisms so you can move back into your relaxed state. And now, again, because of neuroplasticity, you've built a healthy cycle in your life. You know when to use your defense mechanisms and how, and you also know how to turn them off so that you can become relaxed again.
I really like that distinction of, you know, the defense mechanism, they're useful when we need them. The problem is when we are using them all the time. And I guess that's, you know, kind of applies to so many things in life. We do it once it's all right, if it happens all the time. That is, there was a question in my head that kind of flew out, but I'm pretty sure it will come at.
That's okay. I'll talk and it might come back to you. But the thing that we're talking about in terms of social engagement, when we start letting go of those defense mechanisms, we come back into proper relationship again. And we even know what this feels like. If you've been talking to somebody over the internet, as an example, and it was a close friend and you said, look, I have a problem. I want you to help me deal with it. I just need you to hear me. If that person is there, because in the ventral vagal system, it's our facial muscles, it's our eyes, it's our voice, all of those sort of project out to you, you're safe. Go ahead and tell me the problem. Once you tell me the problem, then all of a sudden your ventral vagal activates and you go, oh, wow, that was really helpful. Thank you so much. And now all of a sudden you've let down all your defenses. So you don't need them anymore, see? So we do this regularly in life. We're just making it aware to people that we need to do this more regularly, and we need to do it, in a sense, systematically. And TRE is one technique to add to that, to keep creating that healthy cycle of down-regulating and feeling calm and relaxed in yourself. And when you are in that state, then social engagement is quite natural, see? And so now your relationship with your spouse or your partner or your children is actually quite normal because you took away the stressors.
Well, the question was, so would you consider TRE a self-regulation skill or tool that we built?
Yeah, well, it actually is, but here's our complication. If you have severe stress from childhood traumas or that sort of thing, and you start activating a down-regulating mechanism, well, if you don't know how to control that down-regulation in terms of speed, you may down-regulate too quickly, and then you'll feel vulnerable or exposed, or your defenses may reactivate to protect you. So in general, for stress and tension, if you're dealing with traumas and you're not used to what we call self-regulating, if you don't know how to do it, the tremor mechanism could downregulate you too quickly and then you feel too overexposed or too vulnerable. And that's when I say, well, do it with somebody else who knows how to help you regulate the tremor mechanism. But usually very quickly, once you learn how to regulate at the speed that your body can handle, then you can even self-regulate at times when you're recovering from traumatic events.
Well, that's something new to me about TRE, but you know that speed is really important. And speed is that it's actually the opposite. Slowness is really important.
Yeah, slowness is our friend here, because see, trauma usually happens with speed and overwhelm. Traumatized people usually like to recover very quickly. Help me get out of this. I want to do one session and I want to be free of my trauma. But that's already the trauma pattern that I want to recover quickly. Recovery, just like if you cut yourself or anything like that, your skin has to heal at its own speed. It can't recover quickly just because your ego tells it to. So if you're dealing with a strong traumatic event that you're recovering from, that means recover at the speed that the human organism can integrate and slowly let go of these defense mechanisms in a manner that it can let go and it still feels safe and it still feels like it can move in the right direction. But letting go can be just as overwhelming as contracting could be.
Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Okay. So when trauma happens to us, we contract very quickly as a way of protecting, okay? Which is very good. That helps us. But in the recovery process, we want to let go of that tight contraction that the body's experiencing very slowly. See, it's sort of like if I gave you a deep tissue massage and I was very intense and it was too much for your body, you could feel like instead of feeling pleasure and safety, you'll start to feel protection and defensive, and you'll feel pain and you'll feel hurt, and you'll feel like you've contracted more from the massage than you actually were able to release. Well, that's the tremor mechanism. And here's a good example. You know the tremor mechanism activates most initially in the legs and in the pelvis. What if I'm recovering from sexual abuse and all of a sudden my pelvis starts to open up and I start to feel relaxed in it and I start to feel sensation in it, but sensation then feels frightening to me. And so all of a sudden I contract again, not because the tremor mechanism is dangerous, but my brain hasn't yet figured out that this type of sensation in my pelvis is safe, different from the sensation that was overwhelming in the past from the sexual abuse, that was dangerous sensation. Now I have to retrain it to recognize, oh, there can be sensation that's safe and pleasurable sensation. And so we rewrite the script in the psycho-emotional state of the individual.
Yeah, that's, I was listening to someone talk about the nervous system a few days ago, and it's talking about excitation. And I think it comes from Peter Levine's somatic experiencing work, that sometimes just the excitement or that kind of a hyper arousal, even if it's a pleasurable, pleasant circumstances, the body and the mind can perceive it as a threat.
Yes, that's exactly right. We're retraining the body to experience defenselessness as pleasure and safety, Whereas if I was defenseless in the time of the trauma, that would have been dangerous. See, so the body at that moment of the traumatic event says, I will never open up again. I'll never be defenseless again. I'll never feel again because I need to protect myself for the rest of my life because this might happen again. And that's how we end up living in traumatic states our whole life long instead of retraining the brain to say, and the body, okay, at that moment, you were great to close up and not feel anything, but we can't live like that. We have to retrain it to say, now we're in safety. So now I can let go of the defenses in my body. I can feel sensation and pleasure, and my brain can integrate that and say, yeah, there's good sensation and pleasure, and there's bad sensation.
That brings me to a piece we talked about last time, is that the tremor mechanism, that it's natural, that our body gets into that to recover from trauma, happens after, you know, even falling down. So what would be helpful for, you know, the listeners this time, if we could, you know, repeat that. If, you know, I'm standing and, you know, on a ladder and I fall down, what would be the process or the something that would give me the best outcome of not having this get stuck as a trauma within myself?
Okay. Usually, oftentimes after the traumatic or stressful event, when the person is safe, they will start to tremor naturally. And if that happens, that means your body's saying, I'm ready. I know how to get out of this, and I want to get out of it now because I don't want to hold on to it. So it probably means the body is beginning to feel safety, and it's ready to release the defensive mechanism. So you can follow that because it happened organically. Now, if we fall off a ladder, as an example, well, that would depend. Did you hurt your hip, or did you hurt your head or your back or something like that? What you can do, usually I tell people, is lay down in bed because it's a comfortable, safe surface, and then try to activate the tremor mechanism. And if it activates, that means it's safe, it will do that. But then they have to then regulate how much comfort did they feel. Because I have people activate the tremor mechanism, and as it starts to move through the pelvis and into the spine, then they'll say, oh, I had a compressed disc several years ago, and now I'm feeling a little frayed. Now, see, the tremor mechanism isn't hurting them, but they are starting to feel afraid because they've been protecting that compressed disc for years. So I tell them, okay, well, then stop for a minute. Stop for like 2 minutes and then reactivate the tremor mechanism again and see if you still have the same fear result. Because we're going to slowly tease the tissue to soften, and we're going to slowly tease the ego to kind of stop protecting that area. See, so we have to be gentle with both of those. I have to be gentle with you psycho-emotionally, how fast can you go? And gentle with you physically, how fast can you go? So TRE really is a self-regulating technique, except we're so dysregulated that we have to retrain people how to self-regulate. The tremor mechanism isn't dangerous, but it's teaching people how to self-regulate is what needs to happen. And then they can use that tremor mechanism on their own quite safely.
The piece that I wanted to also highlight, you know, in line what you said, of course, is that the tremor is a natural mechanism. So if something happens and we find ourselves trembling, or, you know, there's a tremor happening somewhere, is that it's okay. Because I think conventional, it's not wisdom, but, you know, practice is to, even when someone is convulsing, you know, from, you know, fever or something mild, is to hold them, be afraid.
Yeah, we've misinterpreted or misunderstood this natural tremor mechanism. So we've attributed qualities to it of, oh, he's afraid, he's weak, he's vulnerable, he's frightened, he's insecure. So every time we tremor, because it's an out of control experience, meaning the ego isn't controlling the body and producing it, we call that negative, whereas the body has no idea we did that. If your body tremors out of weakness or fear or vulnerability or whatever, that's a good sign. It means you're healthy. Your body's saying, great, I understand you're nervous, etc., but let's calm down the nerves, because if I calm down the nerves, we'll actually be stronger. We'll make better decisions. So the body is working to our advantage, see? It's trying to show us, no, I'm going to tremor you, and if I tremor you, you're going to make a better decision, or you're going to be able to understand what to do next. And so it's actually working to our advantage to try to help us, and yet we continue to inhibit that mechanism, see? And that's where we get into trouble, because it needs that mechanism to come out of that high state of alertness and to bring us back down into being calm. And so, yes, it's been a very misunderstood mechanism. But see, what's interesting is we didn't misunderstand it. If you go into cold weather, your body will start to shiver once your temperature drops to a certain level. It shivers without your ego's permission. Mm-hmm. It just starts to shiver itself. And the reason it does that is it's going to raise your body temperature. And once the temperature gets high enough again and you're healthy, it'll stop shivering. Well, this is exactly the same mechanism for a different purpose. See, it doesn't ask the ego's permission. It starts to tremor because it knows it's the right thing to do. But unfortunately, the ego can shut this one down. It really can't stop the shivering mechanism when you're cold, but it can stop this mechanism when you're afraid, see? So if we could accept it as the same thing, oh, my body's tremoring, that means it's healthy. It's trying to get me back to a different state than the one I'm in, which is basically an overwhelmed state. It's trying to bring me back into a calm state, and it's doing that to my benefit. My body's trying to help me. If we could ever get that in our consciousness and get our ego to believe that, we would be able to self-regulate all the time.
Yeah, since I've learned this mechanism, then if myself or even my kids have an accident and I find their hand, feet, whatever it is, shivering, I'll just stand there, just stay with them until it kind of goes away. And I keep telling them that's all right. It's not a problem. So I'm grateful for this information that I know. And that's why I wanted to highlight it and let the listeners know this. I'm noting we're coming to the end of the hour, and I don't want to end this without going back to the origin or the birth of TRE. And if I remember correctly, you were in Sudan or?
Yeah. So I was living both in the Middle East and in Africa, and Sudan in particular. And I recognized we were in a bomb shelter, and I had two children who were sitting on my laps. They were about 2 years old. And when the bombs came, of course, it's terrifying. And they started shivering in terror. And I had my hands on them, and I was holding them to let them feel safe. And I could feel in my hands their body shivering. And I found it fascinating, because as I looked around the bomb shelter, I realized all of these little children are all shivering very freely. But when you get up to about the age of 9, 10, or 11, I could see that they were kind of shaking, but they were trying to hold back the shaking. And finally, none of the adults were shaking at all. And I found that fascinating, because I thought, I'm probably seeing something more natural in the children than in the adults. So when we were finished and we got out of the bomb shelter, I asked some of the adults, do you ever shake like the children do? And the answer was perfect. They said, no, we don't shake like that because we don't want them to think we're afraid. And that was very insightful, because I realized, oh, they would shake like that if there wasn't some implied message. And it made me think of crying then. That's another body overwhelming sensation that at 2 years old, if I fall and I hurt my knee, I will cry freely, because that's the mechanism the body uses to start to downregulate that high anxiety of hurting myself. It was a shock. It was a surprise. And so the body cries as a way of pulsating itself to calm itself down. And every mother knows this. When you hold their children, when they're crying and you let them cry, when they're done crying, they get up and they start playing again. All they needed to do was downregulate, and they needed you to accept that. The tremoring mechanism is the same. See, so the crying mechanism, when we're about the age of 9, 10, or 11, we become embarrassed. We don't want to cry anymore. We're considered weak. And so then when we're adults, we very, very hard try never to cry. Even at a funeral, you can watch adult people, particularly men, holding back crying, which is the worst thing in the world you could do, because your diaphragm needs to pulsate. That's all crying is, pulsation of the diaphragm. And so just like we've learned how to control our bodies not to cry, we've learned how to control our bodies not to tremor. And we have completely divorced ourselves from some of the most natural mechanisms to keep the human organism alive and pulsating and, quite frankly, happy.
When you're talking about pulsating, laughter comes to my mind. Because now, you know, within there's laughter circles, and I'm finding I've joined some of them, and they're quite relief. So that's another pulsating mechanism that we have.
Exactly right. See, for me, I try to take crying and laughing out of my vocabulary, because when those experiences happen, it truly is nothing but exactly that, the pulsation of the diaphragm, because it's rapidly pulsating in a way that we couldn't do it consciously. So it has a mechanism built in it to laugh and a mechanism to cry that when we get overwhelmed, it will start activating rapid pulsation. It doesn't decide whether it's laughter or crying. That's why some people could laugh at a funeral. And they mean to cry, but their body is laughing. Some people don't know whether they're laughing or crying. They just know, I'm making this pulsation, or this pulsation's happening, and I don't know what it is. That's because the body doesn't make any distinction. It just is rapidly pulsating the diaphragm. We call it laughter or crying.
Oh, that's a fascinating, you know, connection. That it's essentially, that's what it's doing. And yeah, when we're crying or laughing uncontrollably, as not the ego's
right
control, it feels like, yeah, it's a workout, and there's a lot of muscles that have worked. So when they, you know, I don't know who said laughter is the best medicine, there was a level of physical truth, physiology truth in it.
Well, every one of us knows after we've had a strong cry for whatever reason, or a strong laugh, at the end, we go, oh my God, I'm exhausted. That was so funny, or that was so sad, or whatever. But we can actually feel our body has let go of all these tight muscles, and often we sleep better that night.
Absolutely. Oh, unfortunately, we're coming to the end of the hour. This has been a really fascinating conversation, and I've certainly learned a lot, and I hope the listeners would learn a lot. Now, I'll put the traumaprevention.com, that your website, anything that you're doing now in the days of lockdown online that you're offering that listeners can, you know.
Yeah, we just put a new video up today on the website. And it's me leading people to the exercises that we have on the internet for free for people to access. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to encourage people to go there, follow the exercise routine on the internet. It's for free, but do it as a family and try to use these circumstances as a way of improving our family relationships. But that's free, and I encourage people to go there and look at them and try them for yourself.
That's awesome. But when I was talking to Mohammed a few days ago, and we had, you know, agreed we will record one episode in Arabic for our Arabic listeners. So I hope that can also provide people with some tools, with some understanding of how our nervous system is working and reacting, because I think this is a big piece.
Yeah, both of you are very articulate, and you understand TRE quite well. So please do something in Arabic. I would love it if you did that. And I support that completely.
Well, thank you so much, David. It's been a pleasure, as always. And I still hope we meet in person one day.
Someday we will, I'm sure of it.
Yes, after all this, the world have calmed down, and we would sit and reflect back on this period of history that we all went through.
It could be remarkably positively transformative for us if we can move in the right direction.
Yes. Thank you so much, David.
Thank you.